Under the endless black canopy of space, something is coming. Scientists call it 31 Atlas, a mysterious interstellar object streaking toward our solar system. To some, it's nothing more than a natural traveler from another star. To others, it could be the most important discovery in human history, a probe from an alien civilization. But if that's true, are we ready? Tonight, we welcome one of the world's foremost experts in the search for intelligent life beyond Earth, a man who has spent over 25 years on the front lines of SETI, shaping how we listen, look, and prepare for the possibility of first contact. Former SETI Institute Chairman John Gertz, author of the upcoming Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, joins us to separate fact from hype, science from speculation, and to tell us why our bigger challenge may not be finding alien life, but what happens the moment we do. Before we do begin with the interview, I do want to make sure that we mention, for those of you that don't know, astronaut James Jim Lovell has died at the age of 97 on August 8th, according to NASA. He was a veteran of the Gemini 7, Gemini 12, and Apollo 8 missions before becoming the mission commander for the nearly disastrous Apollo 13 mission to the moon. This is all according to NASA. I wanted to make sure that we did recognize that as we started off this hour. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, John.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
There are a lot of different things that pass through our skies, right? And some of them kind of surprise us, and it appears surprise NASA with the fact that we're seeing some of these interstellar craft or asteroids, whatever it is, and they're passing through and we've just now located them. How often is something like that happening that, boom, oh, by the way, there's something massive moving through our skies and it's going to pass between Earth and the moon or relatively close, or maybe even closer than we care to acknowledge right now?
Well, Dave, this is the third one that we've discovered. And it actually exactly fits the models astronomers have been using for many years of what would happen if a planet or a star comes close to another star system and disturbs its cometary cloud, that the gravity might tug it off and shoot some of those comets in all sorts of different directions. And inevitably, some of those comets, interstellar comets, may course their way right through our own solar system. So actually, astronomers have been predicting and expecting that we would discover something like this. But this is only the third one that we have discovered. The reason for that is that our telescopes are now really getting great. We're entering a new age of telescopes where massive telescopes are coming online, and we should be seeing these things on a fairly routine basis now. Now, is this specific one an alien craft? In all likelihood, no. It really does look like it's a comet. Now, that's the bad news for those of you who are UFOs or UAP enthusiasts. The good news is that I'm telling you that as someone who actually has hypothesized that ET's far better strategy than sending signals from its own solar system to ours is to send robotic probes or spacecraft or what you would call UFOs or UAPs to our solar system to first surveil us and then perhaps to make contact with us. So although I'm skeptical of this particular comet, I'm not skeptical about it, it's a comet, but the idea that interstellar spacecraft that are of artificial derivation could be in our solar system right now. In fact, in my judgment, are in our solar system right now is something that I think can be strongly deduced.
I know there was quite a bit of banter going on a few years back regarding Oumuamua, this large interstellar thing that moved through, but it seemed to be moving in a more intelligent design and doing things that are not normal for just asteroids or passing celestial body things. What do you make of that? Do you believe that there is something more intelligent to Oumuamua, or is this just another scientist hypothesizing what it could be or could mean?
Almost all astronomers agree that it was a rock, okay. A very interesting rock, but a rock. In other words, it's an asteroid or perhaps a comet. But The reason for that is that the reason for that are several fold. One, and I think the most compelling one, is that it was coming from absolutely nowhere in particular and going to absolutely nowhere in particular. It was millions of years before since the last time it passed through a solar system, and probably millions more before it goes through another solar system. If, on the other hand, it had been coming from, say, Barnard's star, a very close star to us, and headed to Alpha Centauri, I would have been the first to say, hey, let's pop the champagne. Such a contrived, you know, course and trajectory can only be of artificial derivation. No, it wasn't. And it doesn't pass many other tests of artificiality. I know that the claim is that it deviated by 0.1% from the trajectory that would have been predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity as it passed the sun. But you know what? Most scientists, most astronomers agree that it was probably due to outgassing and not due to any other factor. First of all, it was tumbling, tumbling erratically. Any artificial being any squishy being like us would have been permanently sick. It would have been nauseous. And it's hard to imagine how a solar sail would work if it's tumbling erratically. No, it was probably just outgassing that caused a slight deviation. And it wasn't going at any particularly great speed. So it would take, tens of thousands of years, more than 100,000 years, I think, just to get to the nearest star, if it was headed to the nearest star. And it wasn't. It's headed to nowhere in particular. So this one was a rock. But again, there are spacecraft out there, alien spacecraft out there. But let's not divert our attention or think that every rock is an alien spacecraft, because it's not.
You say this with such certainty. I love it. I'm glad that you're able to say that there are things out there, because there are still a large sect of our population that thinks it's crazy. There are no aliens. And if there were aliens, we would have already contacted them. They would have been here. And they seem to be overlooking the massive amount of eyewitnesses from every walk of life, including government, military, and more, that have come forward to talk about the things that are in our skies. John, why do you think it's still such a bone of contention to agree or admit that we are not alone?
Well, look, in my book, Reinventing SETI, which is actually now out, there is a list of reasons that I give why ET's far better strategy is to send probes to our solar system. One very simple example is it's vastly cheaper than sending signals. You just put all your information on a hard drive or a thumb drive or whatever ET is using, and just send it as a message in a bottle. That's one simple reason, but there are very many more. But that doesn't mean that every reported UFO sighting is real. I'm frankly skeptical about most sightings that I've heard about. And I'll tell you, perhaps after we take a little break, what some of those reasons for my skepticism would be and what it would take to satisfy me that there are actual, aliens that are in our atmosphere swooping around and being seen by human beings or beamed up or whatever. But I'm unsatisfied with the evidence I've seen, and we can go through that if you'd like later.
Will do. John Gertz, our guest for the remainder of this hour. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more to discuss right here on your home for the very best in strange and unusual discussions every Sunday night. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360.
Have you ever felt like something or someone was trying to tell you something? That inner nudge. That quiet whisper from the universe. With intuition sharpened by years of spiritual connection and a deep-rooted gift, Winnie Schrader delivers readings that are compassionate, insightful, and shockingly accurate. Whether you're facing a crossroads healing from heartache, or just curious what the cards reveal Winnie creates a safe, sacred space to explore your journey. This isn't fortune cookie fluff. This is honest, intuitive guidance from someone who's helped hundreds find clarity, closure, and confidence. If you've been waiting for a sign, this is it. Book your session now at lovelotustarot.com and take control of your journey. That's lovelotustarot.com. Winnie's sessions are personal, powerful, and often life-changing. That's lovelotustarot.com.
John Gertz, our guest, Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence is the name of the book. It's out and available now. As a matter of fact, for those of you listening to the podcast version of this episode, we have a link for it on today's program guide. All right, before the break, John, you had kind of queued up the fact that you would give us some insight as to why you're skeptical about many of the different style claims that are being made. But I'm also curious, once we pass what your skepticism is, I'd like to know which things have happened that have certainly piqued your curiosity to believe that we are not alone and that there are things visiting us here now.
If there are. Okay, so let me get the bad news out of the way first. I am a skeptic. Okay. and one of the things that I'm looking for is better photographic information, not necessarily with the quality of photographs. I understand that a cell phone can't necessarily get a great quality photograph of an object flying through the sky. But if they're on the window side of window seats of an airplane, 40 strangers to one another, all photographing the same thing with their cell phones, that would impress me. I would be impressed by look down radar from you know, our satellites are constantly looking down on Earth, and they're seeing every single airplane in the sky. They're not seeing the UFOs. The UFOs.
Right, but John, we also have craft here that we are perfecting that are not being picked up by radar from our foreign adversaries. Obviously, they're picking up more intelligent ways to notice, and we're trying to beat that as well. But I would guess if you're able to cross the stars or dimensions, whatever the belief is, at that point, you might have been able to create something that's creating enough of a disturbance that our satellites can't just pick you up.
It is possible, but I'm telling you that what it would take to, convince me. Okay, I don't deny that they may have amazing stealth technology, but I would also, I wonder along those same lines, with those magnificent or those fantastic accelerations that have been purportedly, witnessed. Where are the sonic booms that should be associated with those? Their spacecraft are made out of matter. That matter moves air molecules. The air molecules create the friction that create the sonic booms. Their laws of nature got to be the same as our laws of nature. Okay, is this type of things that would allow me to give some more credence to it?
Okay.
A multiplicity of witnesses would help a lot. Listen, when a meteor goes through the skies, in the southeast not too long ago, if you remember, or through Russia or whatever, it's caught on hundreds of dash cams. We don't have that kind of evidence. So I'm left skeptical. I'm certainly don't buy any of the conspiracy theories, if you will. Say the Roswell alleged crash of an alien spacecraft. There have been 14 presidential administrations since then. Every single president said we won't allow that information out. The hundreds of or thousands of people that must have been in the know, not one of them made a deathbed confession. Not one of them leaked information to the New York Times. With Donald Trump, do you love him or do you hate him? I don't care. I think we can all agree that Donald Trump probably wouldn't have kept it a secret. So I'm not buying into the conspiracy theories, but
John, there have been quite a few people that were in the know that have come forward about the Roswell, including, some of the first people on the ground that made the announcement, hey, this is a crashed craft, and then had to quickly backtrack that and say it's a balloon, which, again, you've got guys that were not just lackeys working at the gas station making a claim. These were guys that knew what aircraft looked like.
Dave, the beautiful thing about me is that I'm an ignoramus when it comes to UFOs.
Okay.
This is really something that your readers should embrace. I don't know anything more about UFOs than I read in the newspaper, and so far I haven't seen it splashed on the front page of the New York Times. Okay, but that's the beauty here is that I come from an entirely different perspective. I come from the point of view of astronomy, and astronomy begins where the atmosphere ends. And as a would-be astronomer and SETI theorist, I've come to the conclusion, quite apart from the UFO community, that ET's very best strategy is, in fact, to send probes to our solar system. It's cheaper, it's less dangerous because, you know, when they send a signal from their own home planet, by definition, they're announcing exactly where they are. And they may have reason to believe or know that there's some very bad actors in, out there that could possibly do us harm. When they transmit to us from their own home planet, they get nothing back in exchange. They get no information back unless a technological species arises on our planet. And even then, when that species decides to answer. But if they send a probe or probes, they can surveil. They can actually do science. They can send back data to the progenitor civilization. It's much more logical. And then when they do enter into a communication with us, they will do so from the vantage point of really having studied us. They will have learned our languages from Sesame Street. They would have learned our maths from Khan Academy. They would have picked up the rest from YouTube or TikTok or whatever, you know. And maybe when they open up a channel communication, it'll be in the Queen's Own English or in Urdu or Mandarin, whatever.
Now you've brought it up, John. I'm just hoping that when all of our monitors are taken over, that the first thing I hear is, "Hello and welcome, it's me." And it's all Kermit the Frog acting out on video, because that's how they learn the English language. That's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. All right. Anyway, so, sending signals from your home planet is a very difficult proposition.
Right.
After your break, we can probably talk about what all the problems with that is. And, you know, I've, in my book, turned SETI on its head in a sense and say, you know, the reason we haven't gotten any signals or haven't heard anything is we're doing it wrong. We're looking in the wrong way. We're looking in the wrong place. They're not there. They're here.
I like that. Let's talk about that, because there's a lot of confusion. I think this is part of what's taken some of the excitement out of the layperson's fascination with SETI. We hear about these radio bursts, sustained radio bursts that are cycling. And for the majority of us lay people, radio bursts mean something intelligent. It's a radio signal coming to us, which means it's been beamed from some tower somewhere. But I'd like you to clarify what that actually means and where these quote unquote radio bursts emanate from, because I think that will enlighten people a little bit more. And is there a better term we should use than radio burst?
No, they're called fast radio bursts. It's quite a mysterious phenomenon right now. They appear very bright, very loud, very rapid, very quick.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back. We'll be right back. Yeah. John Gertz continues with us right here on your home for the paranormal every Sunday night. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360. Okay, John, let's talk about this. The radio burst signal, like I said in the last segment, I think when people hear that there are these radio bursts, they're thinking that they are some form of technological communication being beamed at us like we beam radio signals, like people listening in their homes and cars right now are hearing us. That, in fact, is not what's meant by these quote-unquote radio signals, is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it is truly a mysterious physical phenomenon. Some of these radio bursts appear to be associated with Magna stars, which are a type of pulsars. But most of them are really completely unexplained. And we get hit by thousands of them every day here. And they're coming from all directions of the universe. And we don't currently know what they are. They could be artificial, certainly if they're a key candidate among SETI theorists for the possibility of being artificial. There's no proof one way or the other. But when you get a new physical phenomenon like that, the best thing, in my opinion, to do is think about it in terms of physical phenomenon, astrophysical phenomenon that are explained by new physics or new astronomy that we don't yet understand. While at the same time, don't shut the door on the possibility that it may be artificial. So the people that discovered pulsars, for example, originally called them in their own laboratory LGMs, little green men.
Okay.
Because they really thought that pulsars might be artificial, but they kept that to themselves and eventually checked their data and rechecked their data and found another pulsar and finally realized that it is a natural phenomenon. It is a neutron star that's spinning around. And so they dismissed the artificial hypothesis. And that seemed to be about the right balance. And that's what we're doing, or I hope what we're doing with fast radio bursts. We consider them possibly as artificial and possibly not. We just simply don't know. Astronomers are studying them fervently right now to try to determine.
People have been very excited for years, decades, over the WOW signal. For people that are not familiar with that, John, can you give a little background on what the WOW signal is, what it means, and where we stand with it today?
Okay, the WOW signal was picked up in, I believe it was 1977 in Ohio by the Big Ear radio telescope in Ohio, where back in those days, what you were looking at was paper printout of the radio signal. So radio astronomy, as far as SETI was concerned, was still pretty primitive. A day or two after the signal was found, which really looked artificial, it just leaped off the page, and it looked exactly like what one would expect from an artificial signal. The researcher there looked at it and wrote the word "wow" next to it, right, with an exclamation point. And ever since then, it's been called the WOW signal. There are problems with that WOW signal. It was not replicated. People have gone back and looked at that same field of view and not seen it again, which is one of my pet peeves. And I talk about it in my book. All radio astronomy should be done by two telescopes in tandem. It should never be done by just one telescope alone. In other words, both two telescopes that are far apart from each other, so that the same microwave oven or whatever whatever's in the that might be causing a disturbance in one is not causing it in the other. And if they both simultaneously look at the same star and record the same signal, well, that is prima facie evidence that it could be artificial. Otherwise, you have to, you know, go back and check again with the same telescope, and you just have to pray that it's still there. So it's a great candidate. It's a real frustration that we've never seen it again. So it was certainly possibly of artificial derivation. Nobody knows at this point.
Now, you call yourself a skeptic. To clarify, you're skeptical of the fact that we're being visited by aliens, but you're not a skeptic in the fact that you believe there are drones or craft that are not of our terrestrial nature that are passing by or checking us out.
Well, I'm not skeptical that we're being visited by aliens. We are being visited by aliens.
Okay.
We're out there in our own solar system right now surveilling us. Of that, I am convinced, given only that there is an alien civilization out there, or multiple alien civilizations that are interested in communicating with the rest of the galaxy. What I believe is a very persuasive case in my book that the aliens exist. They are here. They're in our solar system. I don't know that they're entering our atmosphere. At least I haven't seen evidence that convinces me that they're here in our atmosphere. I'm certainly open to that evidence. I certainly don't discount the possibility.
What do you think, in your estimation, is the most compelling piece of evidence that we are not alone? I mean, real evidence.
Oh, alone in the galaxy?
Yeah. And I don't mean by microbial things that they're saying, oh, we found proof of life.
Technological life. Listen, it's one hell of a waste of real estate if we are alone. It's 400 billion stars, they give or take half a dozen, you know, whatever. It's a big, big galaxy. Never mind the rest of the universe where there are trillions of other galaxies. It's a big space. Our life seems to, my bet is that life is ubiquitous. I think we're going to find evidence of life or past life be it fossil or currently existing life in our own solar system, in the underneath the surface of Mars, in the clouds of Venus, on the moon of Europa, in the geysers of the moon of Enceladus, and on and on. I'm pretty confident that we'll discover microbial life elsewhere in our own solar system. If you find just one other case of life in our own solar system that is sui generis, that began by itself, then that must certainly mean, if it happened twice in one solar system, it must be ubiquitous everywhere. Then the question is whether it evolves into technological life. My strong suspicion is that it does.
We capture amazing footage with the Hubble telescope. We are able to see beyond our wildest dreams now and get these amazingly clear images. But yet something passes through our area and we get a blurry mix of cosmic dust and something at the head of it. Why do you think we can get such a beautiful clear view so far out, but something a little closer passing by us, we can't get a good enough view of what it is we're looking at? Is it just simply the speed of which it's moving?
Well, I'm not quite sure which object that we're not getting a good view of, but I'm going to give you a classic case. That is Oumuamua.
Okay.
By the time we saw it, it was already passing the sun and leaving our solar system. We only got a few pixels, really, okay, on it. It was the blur of a blur because, you know, for you. And honestly, this is the problem that I have with some people who really extrapolate wildly from the available evidence, is that anybody can see whatever the heck they want in a blur. Okay.
Right.
And that was the case with Oumuamua. It was just too small an object, too far away to get a decent picture of it. And the current comet that's vaguely coming towards us, it's not coming anywhere near the Earth per se, but vaguely coming in our direction. That is to say, it's getting closer to us, not further away from us. We're going to get better and better pictures of it as it comes closer to us. And we should have a very definitive, you know, we should be very definitively able to say that it's a comet and nothing other than a comet.
All right, John Gertz, our guest. Again, we have a link for his book, Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, on today's guide. Make sure you order the copy, read it, and rate and review it. We'll be right back.
Oh, are you reading me? Come in. Hello?
Greetings from the shadow, and welcome to Shadowzine. My name is Jeff Belanger. I'm an author, podcaster, and explorer of the unexplained. For 30 years, I've been investigating the paranormal, UFOs, monsters, and things that bump in the night. Lately, you may have noticed how major TV networks and even social media networks have been pushing our favorite subject back into the shadows. I say good. That's why I launched Shadowzine, a monthly underground publication that covers your favorite topics in depth by some of the leading writers and researchers out there. If you're looking for 30-second TikTok clips, go somewhere else. If you're ready for a deeper dive, put down your phone and pick up Shadowzine. You can't find it in stores. This is old-school print. Head to shadowzine.com and be part of the underground revolution. That's shadowzine.com, and I'll see you in the shadow.
John Gertz, our guest this evening, and Reinventing SETI, that's the name of the book, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. John, as we wrap up tonight on the program and we look at all of the possibilities that are out there, I'm curious, how closely are we working with other governments around the world? Are we trying to network our listening and satellite technology, our radio telescope technology, so that we can get more conclusive evidence or start to narrow down the areas that we should be focusing on?
Let me say that there's tremendous cooperation among SETI programs all over the world. However, I want to give a caution here. The Chinese have gotten into the field. And in fact, our scientists are trained Chinese scientists, and they're doing SETI right now on the world's largest single dish telescope, the FAST telescope in China. And people don't quite realize we're in a race, a SETI race with the Chinese, because I want to just pose the simple question. If they make a detection before we do, and if they hear a message from ET, to the likes of which, guys, we're glad that to make your acquaintance, to get the ball rolling, let's download to you all the cornucopia of technology and wisdom and whatever that we've got. Do you think the Chinese are going to share that with the rest of us? Or do you think they're going to stamp it top secret and that's going to be that?
Most likely, yeah.
Okay, so I think we need to recognize that we're in a race with the Chinese just on SETI, just as we are to get back to the moon and in many other spheres. And we should take that very seriously. We should be, And in my book, I argue that we need to have an international treaty governing SETI and governing most particularly what happens after the day of first contact with aliens and what do we all do about it. So let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say that I'm correct and that our solar system have probably multiple probes of alien derivation. And one of them one day opens up a line of communication and says to us, guys, we've been watching I Love Lucy. It's given us a great laugh. We're not so happy about the nightly news. We think you could be a pretty wretched place. But I'll tell you what, we'll take a risk and we'll fly around you and give you all our knowledge and cornucopia of wisdom and so forth. Come up and get it. It's in our cargo bay on our version of a hard drive. Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't that start a race? The Chinese, the Americans, Elon Musk on his own, all racing to get to that probe and get that hard drive for themselves. What happens if we get there first? Will the Chinese be incentivized to shoot down our returning capsule? Lest we get that great technological advantage that they will then be deprived of? Who knows? Nobody's thought this stuff out. And in my book, I try to make a potent case or a coherent case that it's long overdue that we should form a committee of experts, not comprised of astronomers, just perish that thought, but also everybody from diplomats and military specialists and economists, game theorists, cryptologists, linguists, and on and on. And that they should, as a first work product, devise a treaty that would govern all of our activity prior to and post detection of our first civilization. In fact, you don't need a huge committee to draft the treaty. And in my book, I actually do draft the treaty, at least the first treaty that people might be able to use, at least for a starting point for the discussion. But this kind of contingency planning has never been done, and it needs to be done because we only have two choices, either to deal with the fact of alien contact after the fact in a state of complete befuddlement and everybody for themselves, or we can deal with it now and make the necessary thoughtful contingency plannings that and advise the UN Security Council, presumably, in the proper way of dealing with ET. So each should that probe or if you want to call it a UAP or a UFO, be studied in a laboratory or be treated as an ambassador? What are we going to be doing here? It's my view that it's going to be artificial, but for all intents and purposes, it's going to pass the Turing test. In other words, it will be indistinguishable from a conscious being, and in fact, maybe a conscious being, even though it's made out of silicon instead of carbon. So we should treat it as an ambassador. But that's nevertheless a debate that we still need to have in advance of the topic.
It is a little strange to be this far along in our journey and have not come up with something baseline that we all can agree upon, which I know is going to be a hard enough task, but it is a little bizarre that we haven't come to that point yet, John.
You know, SETI gets no funding from the government, or at least the United States government, and a smattering of funding elsewhere. And the Chinese are a whole other matter, leaving them aside. The NASA doesn't fund us. We're funded through private philanthropy, basically. That's a mistake. But the bigger mistake is to look to NASA as the proper funding authority. The real proper funding authority should be the Defense Department. And because what we're doing in SETI is really situational awareness. Mm-hmm. In the military sense of the word, we should know what the heck is out there. And what do we know about ET's motivations? Are they here to aggress against us? Are they here to save us? Give us great right. wisdom, just trade with us. Who knows?
Get John's book, Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And if 31 Atlas turns out to be nothing more than a lump of cosmic rock, the questions John Gertz raised tonight don't go away. They grow louder because one day something truly extraordinary could appear in our skies. And when it does, the real test won't be whether we can detect it, but whether we have the wisdom, unity, and foresight to respond. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence isn't just about scanning the heavens. It's about understanding ourselves, our readiness, and the kind of civilization we want to be when the universe finally says hello. That's it for this week. We'll be back again with you next week right here on the Paranormal 360.